Hey everybody, it's Sam from Financial Samurai, and in this episode, we're going to talk about my investment outlook for stocks, bonds, and real estate for 2018. So before we get into the details, I think it's first important to understand where I'm coming from, because we all have biases, and my bias is often anchored to traumatic instances in my life that change the way I view things. So for example, in 2008 to 2010, I was highly long real estate, a lot of debt, and I got crushed. So that's always going to make me a little bit hesitant about going all in. So let me several points to talk about. One, I permanently left the workforce in 2012 at the age of 34. So that means a couple things. One, I have enough money to survive, but at the same time, I don't want to take too much risk because I don't want to go back to work. I have a new family now and a spouse who is a stay-at-home mom, and she works with me on the business part-time. So it's just really us trying to survive with our own two hands. We live in expensive San Francisco, and we plan to move to Honolulu, which is equally expensive if you adjust for the income opportunities there. What else? My favorite asset class is real estate, and I worked in the equities department for a couple major banks for 13 years, so I've seen it all, from the ups and the downs to different investment styles in the stock market. And then finally, I have a relatively large position in stocks, bonds, and real estate. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm not talking, hey, these are the investment ideas, this is what I think, without having any skin in the game. I've got massive skin in the game. They're seven-figure positions in each of the asset classes. So hopefully with this background information, you have a better idea of where I'm coming from and why I think the way I do. So overall, I think 2018 is going to be the last year where easy money is going to be made. So easy money as in not too much volatility and returns pretty much hugging the historical norm. So let's start with the stock market. And I view the stock market from the perspective of a small business owner. So did you know that small businesses account for about 48% of national employment? And further, they represent almost 100%, so 99.7% of all businesses in the country. So in other words, you know, the folks like myself who have a digital business, or the plumber or the electrician, these are the folks who make up a massive part of the American economy. And then based on my interactions with other small business owners, there is a tremendous, tremendous amount of euphoria because of lower taxes, but mainly because of the perception shift that the government is actually going to be on our sides instead of against us. So if you run a small business, as actually most people do not, it is pretty competitive. And there's all these things we've got to jump through. There's these fees we have to pay, you know, we have to register for this and that. We've got like this annual tax that we've got to pay here in California. We've got to pay both sides of the FICA tax. Yet, you know, if our business ever goes under, we can't really collect unemployment for some reason. And there's all sorts of things that really make running a business hard thanks to government red tape. So our belief, my belief, is that the federal government at least is going to try to make things easier for us. And if things are easier, we're going to reinvest more of our retained earnings into hiring more people, buying more assets to hopefully generate a greater return. And that in turn should increase operating profits and increase valuation for businesses. So this is from a small business perspective. And large businesses, what we, you and I, can actually invest in on a public exchange are just bigger versions of small businesses. They really are. There's the same type of enthusiasm that's going on across many, many boardrooms, whether you like Donald Trump or not. If we take a look at the S&P 500 Case-Shiller PE ratio, it's about 33 times. And that's expensive if you look at history. But you know what? What's the difference between 33 times and 36 times, 38 times? It's all kind of about the same, very, very expensive. What we're seeing right now in the final stages of a blow-off is a massive amount of enthusiasm and liquidity driving the market. So in my opinion, I think the S&P 500 breaches 3,000 in 2018, and that's 10% upside. If we used a 44 times multiple based on 2,000 valuations, we'd get to 3,600 on the S&P 500. I don't think that's going to happen, but that is kind of like the supreme upside buffer that a lot of investors are looking for. So in summary, my goal is to buy the dips in 2018 and ride the stock market until something changes. And I think that something will change based on what the bond market will tell us. So I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think we're in a permanently low interest rate environment. The 10-year bond yield has been going down every single year, well, almost every single year since the late 1980s. And we're around 2.45 to 2.5%. And so for 2018, I'm looking for another sub 3% level for the 10-year bond yield, and more likely an average of around 2.6%, despite a couple more Fed funds rate hikes expected this year. So in other words, I expect bonds to not lose principal value and to at least earn a total return equal to their coupon rate. So if you buy a municipal bond that has a 3% coupon, I think you're going to get at least 3%. And if you got a little bit of a tailwind where bonds rally a little bit, maybe you'll get 4%. What I think is really interesting to note is that with the Fed raising the short end and the long end not changing, you're seeing a flattening of the yield curve. So the difference between like the 30-year bond yield and like a 5-year or shorter is like 80 basis points. So if you think about it, if the Fed raises the Fed funds rate by 50 basis points this year in two steps, there's essentially only like a 30 basis point spread between the long bond and the short end. So that is a really flat curve. And if you look into the post, you'll see a chart that highlights whenever the yield curve goes flat or goes inverted, it basically portends to an imminent recession. And the way to think about it is essentially the Fed is choking off credit for borrowers, you know, credit card debt and all that is tied to the short end. And for those who want to borrow more money, the credit is more expensive. So it chokes off the economy, chokes off inflation, and slows the economic growth. But on the flip side, as an investor, it's interesting to note that if the Fed is really dedicated towards maintaining inflation or containing inflation, then there's less fear to invest in longer term duration bonds. Therefore, that's why you're seeing long-term yields stay kind of flat. And there's also this globalization where foreign countries like China, India, Japan, Europe, you know, they're all buying US denominated debt, which is keeping interest rates low. So that's great for us as consumers, but just beware of the flattening of the yield curve. All right, finally, real estate, my favorite investment class. I think it's a tale of two cities. One is the expensive coastal city market slowing down and actually declining, and then the heartland real estate, flyover states, actually continuing to do quite well. So remember in June 2017, I talked about how I couldn't find renters to pay the same amount of rent that I've been getting since 2015. I was trying to get renters to pay $8,800 to $9,000 a month for the rental house. And after 45 days of trying, the best I got was $7,500. One was from a divorcee. She's an entrepreneur, really unstable business. I don't think it's going to take off. So I was like, that's a little too risky. And then the other one was from a family of six with a dog. So that's just a massive amount of people, also at $7,500. And I didn't feel it. Their timing was off. They were like, oh, can we rent maybe in 2 months? So I just didn't want to give up 2 months of rent and risk not having another buyer in 2 months because I had an offer in hand. So if you look at the post, you will now see data from Zumper, which highlights how much rents have fallen in various cities, 12 of the most expensive rental markets from the peak. So for San Francisco, for example, it's the most expensive market. It's down 12.4% from the October 15th peak for two bedrooms. And that's pretty much in line with what I've experienced and what I just talked about. So you're finally seeing the data. So the good thing about some of the articles that I write or talk about is that I'm giving you real-time data, and this kind of data will follow through into the publications in the future. There's always a lag when it comes and hits mainstream media. So real estate, at the end of the day, trades on rent valuations, right? Just like stocks trade on a multiple of earnings. So rent is earnings for real estate. And if you're seeing earnings or rent go down, let's say 12.5% for two bedrooms and even more for three bedrooms in San Francisco, you should see a commensurate decline in the price of real estate in San Francisco, for example, if valuations stay the same. Now, after the new tax plan was passed, there's a structural change because of the SALT cap of $10,000 and then the mortgage interest cap of $750,000. That's a structural change that should see like a step down on the demand curve, like a shift down. If you remember Economics 101, the demand curve is shifting down with this new tax plan. So you've got declining rents and structural change. So that's not good. And I think coastal city real estate, the top 20 most expensive real estate markets, are going to be flat to, let's say, down 5% to no more than 10%. Because at the end of the day, the economic engine, job growth, is still quite solid. But it just feels that the good times are over for the most expensive markets. Now, the heartland real estate market, flyover states, non-coastal cities, I think they still have room to run, maybe another 3 to 5 years. There's always a lag. But eventually, they too will see some price compression, because some random folk will be like, well, if New York City prices are down 20%, there's so much, job growth and all that, why not just buy New York, then go to Des Moines, Iowa, for example? So in conclusion, I think it's dead money in the expensive coastal city markets for 1 to 2 years, and you still got 3 to 5 years left for good amount of appreciation for heartland real estate before those markets start slowing down and the numbers start showing up in the data in the second half of 2020. So as a business owner, I just have to say that I haven't been this bullish since 2007, when I got promoted to vice president at my investment bank. That was a great time. But of course, the very next year I got crushed because everything went to hell. Bear Stearns went under or got bought out for pennies on the dollar. Washington Mutual went under. Lehman Brothers went under. It was just a really bad time. And I feel that right now it feels a lot like 2007 again. But I'm prepared for one more good year and then not so much going forward. But this time, I think I'm better prepared because I've got far more passive income streams and a variety of defensive investments and a much lower debt to equity ratio. And I hope you guys also think about the diversification of your net worth and the other income streams to hold you over, so you don't have to sell assets at rock bottom prices or at panic prices if and when a downturn occurs. So hopefully you guys have all your investments figured out, just properly asset allocated based on your risk tolerance. And I'd love to hear from you what your outlook is for the stock market, bond market, and real estate market for 2018, and how you are positioning your investments. Thanks so much.